adding to the already considerable chaos. Mess Sergeant Eskrima, an irascible sort in the best of times, emerged from the galley red-faced, with an enormous cleaver in one hand. He took in the scene in a glance and let out a thunderous roar in some language that, perhaps fortunately, none of the other members of the company understood. Before he took another step, Barky, the environmental dog, bowled headlong into Eskrima, knocking him off his feet. Eskrima went down into a pile of stewed tomatoes, sputtering curses and threats of bodily harm. A split second later, he retrieved his cleaver and jumped up to join the chase. This, of course, was the very moment at which an unsuspecting Captain Jester, a.k.a. Willard Fool, and his loyal butler Beaker, chose to enter the mess hall. Chapter 11. Journal Number 711. A sufficiently obstinate conviction is immune to all demonstrations of its falsity. In fact, they are the best means to harden the conviction, no matter how wrong-headed, into an unshakable credo. And when two or more persons who hold such convictions come into contact, there is no hope of any such thing as communication or mutual enlightenment. The best one can hope for, in my experience, is to keep collateral damage to an acceptable minimum. Predictably enough, Victor Fool was in the High Rollers Lounge where the games were scaled to the ultra-rich, and the security discreetly steered away anyone whose pockets weren't deep enough, although not until they'd had a glimpse of the upper crust. Every nickel-dime punter who walked in the doors of the Fat Chance had a dream of breaking the bank and going home in a private space yacht. Giving them a brief look at the big-time players in action reinforced the glamour that was an essential part of any casino's appeal. "Let 'em dream, as long as they don't touch," was Tully Bascom's credo, and almost everything in the Fat Chance reflected the veteran casino manager's words. Ernie found it very curious that the richest man in the place, there was no question at all that Victor Fool fit that description, was playing the least glamorous game of all, the quantum slots. Ernie wondered about that, and about the fact that the casino had set up a row of slot machines here in a room where the players were more likely to prefer roulette and baccarat. You didn't need to know very much about the business to see that something funny was going on. Ernie's latest theory was that, by ostentatiously playing high-priced slots, Victor Fool hoped to entice other high rollers to drop an occasional token into the machines, which notoriously offered the worst payoffs, or, from the house's point of view, the highest profits, in any casino. The casino stood to make a substantial gain if it could find a way to make the slots fashionable for the big spenders. A few thousand here, a few thousand there. That could add up to a nice sum of money quickly enough. If that was all that was going on, there wasn't likely to be any chance for Ernie to get an edge, but if Victor Fool was doing more than just playing the shill, well, that was what Ernie had come here to find out. The major flaw in the picture of Fool as a shill was that he totally lacked charisma. If the managers of the Fat Chance wanted to convince patrons that the slots were an exciting way to gamble, they could hardly have picked a worse role model. Pumping his tokens into the machines, shirt-sleeved Victor Fool had all the glamour of a middle-aged file clerk trying to avoid re-injuring a bad paper cut. Unless you knew who he was, there wasn't a hint of his money and power. So why was Fool out here working the slots, when he could undoubtedly sit in an easy chair sipping cold drinks and earn more money in half an hour from his businesses and investments than he was likely to win in the biggest payout these machines offered?
"Wait a minute," Ernie thought, with the stunning awareness of someone who's overlooked an iceberg in a swimming pool.
Just how big was the payout on these machines? What if the casino was offering enough to give even Victor Fool a rush of adrenaline every time he yanked the handle? Casinos always made it a point to list the payout on the front of the slot machines to remind the customer just how much he stands to win in the unlikely event of the symbols actually lining up right. Trying to appear as casual as possible, Ernie strolled up to one of the machines at the other end of the bank that Fool was playing, reaching in his pocket as if he might be interested in trying his luck.
"Sorry, my friend. These machines are in use," said a calm voice at his side.
Ernie turned to see a compact, competent-looking man with eyes that looked as if they could have cut a clean hole straight through a planet. The bodyguard, he thought.
"Hey, no problem," said Ernie, genially. "Just taking a look at the payout to see if it's worth my while to play. I can always come back after you're done."
"The payout's fine," said the bodyguard, "but the price is a bit steep. You might do better over at the roulette table. It's only $100 a spin there."
His manner was as casual as Ernie's, although it was perfectly clear he was doing his best to discourage anyone else from playing this bank of machines. That was enough to eliminate any idea that Fool was shilling for the house. No shill would stand in the way of a customer anxious to drop a few tokens in the slot. $1,000 tokens, Ernie realized, looking at the machine he was standing next to. Then he saw what the payout was, and in spite of himself, he let out a low whistle.
"Whoa, are these guys kidding?" he asked. "A partner share in a casino? That can't be for real."
"Oh, it's completely legitimate," said Victor Fool, stepping up to the machine next to Ernie. "I made certain of that, you can be sure. I'm not going to throw my money away for nothing."
"I guess not," said Ernie, stepping back to give Fool room to pull the lever.
He was fully aware of the bodyguard's steady glare as he said, suddenly putting on his best imitation of an educated accent,
"Sorry, I don't mean to cramp your style."
"That's all right," said Fool. "I've about done my 6-hour stint for today. If you've a mind to play these machines after I'm gone, feel free. I don't think anyone besides me has been trying them, though. Shame. A few more players would shorten the odds against someone's winning."
"Well, I guess I got nothing against being part owner of the casino," said Ernie, feigning an interest much milder than he really felt. "I'd have to turn it over to somebody else to run, though. I've got too many other balls in the air back home to stay around here and watch one more small business."
"Here, then. Have a pull on me," said Victor Fool. "If you hit the jackpot and don't want it, you can always sell it back to me."
He reached in his pocket and tossed Ernie a silver-colored metal token. Ernie stared at it in disbelief. It was heavier than it looked from a distance. In the center of each side was a hologram, showing a roulette wheel that spun as the token was tilted to different angles. Around the rim in raised letters it read, "Fat Chance Casino, $1,000. Smaller print added the phrase, "Redeemable in Alliance Funds at any window." The bodyguard was scowling even more fiercely, but Ernie gave the token a flip and said,
"Oh, all right, just one spin. If I win anything, I'll give you half."
He dropped the token in a slot and pulled the lever. The symbols began to spin in front of him.
"All right," said Fool, shading his eyes with his left hand. "Explain to me just what happened at dinner."
Rembrandt stood at the foot of his desk, looking just as unhappy as her superior officer.
"Well, Captain," she began,
"we warned all the non-human members of the company to avoid the dining hall until Barkey and the AEIOU group were gone. It looks as if Barkey has some particular grudge against non-human sophants. You'd think they'd have trained that out of him, but there it is. What nobody had picked up on is that we've got a new member in the company, Thumper by name. He's a Lepoid from Talun."
"And nobody remembered to warn him about Barkey," Fool finished the sentence for her. "Or me about him, either. I had such a perfect plan, too. We'd give the AEIOU inspectors a nice guided tour of the base, pointing out all the neat environmental things we're doing. Then we'd feed them a better meal than they get in their own camp, let the troops make friends with Barkey, and send the inspectors home with everybody feeling good about each other."
"Yes, sir,"
said Rembrandt, not lifting her gaze to meet his. Fool shook his head, then continued in a quiet voice.
"The worst thing is, it almost worked. Even after Barkey had his run-in with Toscanini, I thought we'd manage to smooth it all over. Then this Thumper walks into the mess hall, and Barkey takes off after him like a dog after a rabbit. And now we've got another incident on our hands, just as I thought we were about to make some real headway."
"Eskerma didn't make it any better," said Rembrandt quietly.
"No, I guess not," said Fool.
He raised his hand to grip the bridge of his nose, as if his sinuses were paining him. After a bit he looked up and asked,
"The new recruit, Thumper, is he all right?"
"Yes," said Rembrandt. "He's pretty fast, maybe faster than Qual from what I saw last night. Barkey never had a chance to catch him."
"The canine made an astounding effort, though," Beaker observed quietly. "I've rarely seen such a dogged pursuit."
Rembrandt groaned.
"Well, it was in character," she conceded.
Then her eyes opened wider and she said,
"But that reminds me, Captain. Legionnaire Thumper wants to speak to you personally."
Fool nodded.
"Oh, of course. Is he here? Bring him in, then."
Rembrandt went to the door and beckoned to the waiting legionnaire, and a moment later Thumper came into the room. Fool took a moment to size up the new member of his company, whom he'd seen before only in the chaotic action that had taken place in the mess hall earlier that evening. Thumper stood just under 1.5 meters tall, if you counted his long ears, which in any case were hard to ignore. His eyes were the second most prominent feature of his face, big and brown, nervously checking out the room as he entered. His incisors were prominent, and below his twitchy pink nose were long cat-like whiskers. His feet were long, too, or perhaps it was the obvious adaptation of his entire lower legs for speed that made them appear so. The instant reaction any human child would have had upon seeing him, or any other of his lepoid race, was Big Bunny. Fool had to consciously restrain himself from allowing a goofy grin to spread across his face, and he couldn't help wondering whether there was a fluffy white tail under that Black Legion jumpsuit. Fool somehow managed to keep a straight face as the lepoid came to attention at the foot of his desk and saluted, rather smartly, he thought.
"At ease, Thumper," he said. "What can I do for you?"
The lepoid appeared to relax fractionally.
"I'm not sure, sir," Thumper said. "I've always wanted to be a Legionnaire, but now that I'm in the Legion, I keep having problems with superior officers. I got sent here because General Blitzkrieg thought I'd ruined his uniform."
"The general had you sent here?"
Rembrandt asked.
"That explains it, then. He's been trying to make trouble for us ever since he sent the captain here."
"I hope you don't mean that the way it sounds, Lieutenant," said Fool with a grin. Before Rembrandt could protest her innocence, he turned to Thumper and continued.
"What just happened in the mess hall wasn't your doing, Legionnaire. We thought we'd warned all our non-human Legionnaires to take their meals after Barkey had left, so as to avoid something like what happened. But you were new here, and nobody thought to include you in the warnings.
I'm sorry about that, and it shouldn't have happened. But it's no more your fault than your being a member of a species that the dog wanted to chase. So, relax. Nobody here holds it against you."
"Thank you, sir," said Thumper. "But there's another thing."
He paused.
"Go ahead, Thumper," said Fool.
He'd already noticed that the lepoid spoke excellent standard without using a translator. Thumper took a deep breath.
"As I said, sir, I've wanted to be a Legionnaire ever since I was growing up, but what I've seen so far in the Legion hasn't been at all like what I expected."
"I know what you mean," said Fool, with a quiet smile. "Day-to-day life in the military actually tends to be pretty boring."
He looked at the expression on Rembrandt's face and added, "Well, maybe this company is an exception."
"I consider that rather an understatement, sir," said Beaker, his eyebrows raised.
Rembrandt cleared her throat.
"Perhaps we ought to let Thumper finish what he's saying, sir," she said.
"Ah, of course, you're right, Lieutenant," said Fool. "Please, Thumper, tell us what you were about to say. Sorry for the interruption."
Thumper's ears twitched, and he looked open-eyed first at Rembrandt, then at Fool.
"I was going to ask how I could get out of the Legion and go back home," he said. "Everything that's happened to me since basic training has convinced me I'd made a really bad mistake. But I think I just changed my mind. I mean, I never heard an officer admit he was wrong about something, or apologize to an enlisted Legionnaire. I've got to think about this. So, if you don't mind, I think I'll withdraw my request to speak to you, sir."
"All right, Legionnaire Thumper," said Fool carefully. He hadn't seen much of the little lepoid in action, just that one incredible burst of speed in the dining hall. But he'd read the report from Sergeant Pitbull, who'd been Thumper's drill instructor, in basic. Pitbull's report was obviously phrased so as not to set off too many alarms if a certain someone in Legion headquarters happened to see it. But reading between the lines, it was full of praise for the diminutive recruit. Maybe headquarters had done Omega Company a favor without intending to do so. It wouldn't be the first time that had happened. He chuckled and added,
"Go look around the company and see if you like what you see. If you still want to get out of here after you've had a good look at us, I'll make sure nobody stops you. But give us a chance. I have the idea you might fit into this company better than you think."
"I'll give you a fair chance if you'll give me the same, sir," said Thumper, coming to attention and saluting with a crispness that reminded Fool that the recruit was fresh out of basic.
Fool returned the salute and added a smile.
"You've got a deal, Thumper."
"Somebody remind me where we were before the roof fell in," said Sushi.
It was early in the evening after the food fight in the mess hall, and there was a prominent shiner under Sushi's right eye, where a too enthusiastically thrown apple had nailed him. He'd gone to the auto dock, which had dispensed a couple of pain pills and a tube of cream that would take down the swelling, but the discoloration would still last a couple of days.
"Trying to learn how these here Zenobians can write before they can talk," said Rev,
who'd fallen to the floor early and managed to avoid being hit by anything solid during the food fight.
"And to get right back to square one trying to find out something about this here character name of Leviz in their mythology, which is what got me started on this whole fuss and botheration."
"Yo, Rev,
You really think there's some kind of connection? Asked Doo-Wop.
He'd somehow managed to avoid any damage other than a thoroughly besmirched uniform, despite being one of the prime instigators and most active participants in the mess hall fracas.
I mean, the dinos and humans never even met until just a couple 3 years ago. Don't make sense that they'd know squat about your guy, the king. What do you think, Sush?
It seems far-fetched to me, too, Sushi admitted. But tell me, Rev, why haven't you just asked Flight Lieutenant Qual what it's about? He's got to know.
Sure he does, said Rev. In fact, I tried exactly that, and the little lieutenant clammed up quicker than a politician on a witness stand. The long and short of it is, I gotta find out on my own.
All right, I guess that makes sense, said Sushi. It just doesn't sound like Qual to me. But what if it turns out that the Zenobians had their own analog of the king? It'd be the most sensational discovery since it turned out the Cynthians have a game exactly like human chess, only with a 9x9 board and an extra piece on each side, and the pawns reverse direction when they reach the back row, instead of promoting. Who could resist the chance to be in on a discovery like that?
Me, for one, if they were giving away free beer across the street, said Doo-Wop. I mean, don't get me wrong, Rev. Doing this job is way better than KP or nighttime guard duty, but I don't think it makes a whole bunch of difference how it turns out, you know?
Rev looked at Doo-Wop with one eyebrow arched.
Well, Doo-Wop, if this here project don't move you, I could always cut you loose. Cause, if you were hanging out in the parade ground doing nothing in particular, old Beaker might remember just who it was who was flinging the cheese sauce that got all over the captain's uniform. I won't claim I've had to pull any strings to keep you off in some kind of punishment duty, but it could happen, you know. It could happen.
Aw, come on, Rev, whined Doo-Wop. You know the captain wouldn't do that to me. He's a laid-back dude.
Sure, said Rev, shrugging.
Then he added with a hint of significance,
but Beaker just might be the kind to hold a grudge.
You think so? Asked Doo-Wop, now visibly worried. Jeez, I wonder if there's any way I could make him forget about what was going on there.
Why don't you just let me take care of it, son?
Rev put his hand on Doo-Wop's shoulder and spoke in his most sympathetic voice.
The captain knows I don't have no kind of axe to grind, except maybe to see that the king's good people get treated fair and square. You do a good job for me, and I'll make sure nobody ever says boo to you.
Sushi chuckled. And if my buddy joins the Church of the King, you'll make double sure nobody bothers him, right? He said with a knowing grin.
Why, Sushi, I'm surprised you would suggest such a thing, said Rev. Everybody in Omega Company is my concern, you know that.
Right, but the ones with pompadour sideburns and pouty mouths are a little bit more your concern, said Sushi. Don't worry about Doo-Wop, Rev. I think I've known him long enough to have a pretty good idea what he does best.
Doo-Wop looked up with a surprised expression.
Hey, thanks, Sush. I didn't know you thought that much of me.
Which is goofing off, Sushi finished.
Yo, that ain't fair, said Doo-Wop, punching his buddy on the shoulder. I thought you was going to defend me.
You've known me long enough that you should have known better, said Sushi. But seriously, Rev, you don't have to worry about Doo-Wop. He knows a good deal when he sees one, and this is about as good as he's going to get in the Legion. Trust us. We'll get your results if anybody can. Now, here's an idea I just came up with.
Rev and Doo-Wop bent close to listen, and soon their heads were nodding.
Psst! Harry sent me,
said a shadowy figure just beyond the perimeter of Zenobia Base.
Yeah? What's the word?
Said Double X, who'd volunteered for sentry duty on this part of the perimeter. Rembrandt had been mildly surprised that the supply sergeant's assistant was volunteering for anything at all, but she'd shrugged and put Double X on the duty roster. Anytime somebody actually wanted to take on nighttime guard duty, it was one fewer warm body she'd have to cajole into doing it. And while she'd probably wonder about the reason for the unusual request, the captain's policy was to give the troops a good deal of slack, and she wasn't about to overrule him.
Bird is the word,
said the voice from beyond the perimeter.
What's the bird?
Said Double X.
Thunderbird,
said the voice, somewhat exasperated.
Hey, can we come in now? This password stuff is silly.
You know we gotta do all this stuff in the Legion, man, said Double X.
You got it right anyhow. Come on in, but hurry. We don't want the wrong folks to see you.
We're coming,
said L.P. Osho, stepping out of the shadows. He was followed by Houston O'Better and Austin Tation, All three were wearing dark coveralls, not quite Legion black, but good enough to reduce visibility on a dark night. The three men stopped just inside the perimeter, then Asho asked,
"Which way's Harris' place?"
"Straight ahead," said Double X. "The supply shed's right behind that big Zenobian machine. Watch out you don't trip over it. I don't know whether you can break anything inside your toe, but you wouldn't want to find out the hard way."
"Weird-looking thing," said Obetter. "What's it do?"
"Damn fino," said Double X. "They call it a sklern, and if you know what that means, you're one up on me. Hurry up now, before somebody spots you."
"We're going, don't worry."
The three hunters moved off toward the supply shed, leaving Double X alone on the perimeter. He watched them go, then settled back down to wait. He'd be off duty in another 3 hours. With any luck, the off-planet suckers would still have some money left by then. If what Harry said was right, they had plenty to lose. If they'd already been cleaned out, well, those were the breaks. He'd have to take his chances with the usual crew.
$4,000?
Lola's jaw dropped.
"Victor Fool gave you $4,000?
Ernie grinned, and he tossed the four Fat Chance casino chips lightly from hand to hand.
"To tell you the truth, it was only 1,000. He stopped and laughed. "Ha ha, only. And that was really just a loan to play the slots. For a goof, I guess. I won 9,000 and gave him back his 1 + 1/2 the winnings, so he came out ahead of the game, too."
"All right. But he had no way of knowing you were going to win," said Lola. "Why'd he give you money to throw away in one of those stupid slots?"
"He was going to play it if I didn't," said Ernie. "I think he was just using me to change his luck or something. Or maybe he did know it was going to come up a winner. If he's shilling for the casino, maybe he'd have some way to rig that, figuring that if I do hit a winner, I'll put the money plus some of my own back in the machine trying to win again."
"And just as likely, you'll walk away and cash it in," said Lola, frowning. "Which is exactly what you did, except you didn't cash in. Why not?"
"I wanted him to think I don't need the dough that bad," said Ernie. "I'm pretending to be a guy with a few bucks of my own. If I cash the chips in right away, it looks like I'm hungry for the money. If I just throw a few thou in my pocket like small change and walk out like it's too much of a pain in the ass to wait in line to change 'em, it makes the scam look better. Next time I walk in there, Fool will think I'm one of the big boys just like him, and the chips are good any time. You could go cash 'em in, one chip at a time, and nobody'd know any better."
"Don't be so sure about that," said Lola. "They may have them marked some way. In fact, they may even have them sending out a signal so they can tell where you've gone with them."
"Ah, you're being paranoid," said Ernie. "They wouldn't go to the trouble to rig something that fancy for somebody like me."
"Don't be so sure," said Lola. "Remember, we're dealing with two guys who can very easily get their hands on all the latest military and spy hardware. Or are you forgetting just what it is that the fools do for a living besides running a casino?"
"Shit. That's right," said Ernie.
He stared at the chips for a second, then suddenly stepped over to the bed and stuck them under a pillow.
"You think they're bugged?" he whispered.
"If they really are, we're dead ducks already," said Lola quietly.
"Shit," said Ernie more vehemently.
He stared at the pillow, then turned back to Lola.
"I should have known better than to let that old skinflint slip me those phony chips. What the hell are we going to do now, Lola?"
Lola sat on the windowsill, back to the window. She stretched her arms up and folded her hands behind her head, then said,
"We don't have a lot of choices. Either they've got us pinned or they don't. If they're bugging us, they already know enough to kill any chance we have of our plans working. If that's true, we might as well cut and run and take our chances about Mr. V catching up with us again. I don't like that idea, although $4,000 would give us a fair head start."
"Assuming the fools don't have their security boys waiting to bust whoever tries to cash in the chips," said Ernie, his voice still low.
He shot a glance at the pillow covering the chips, as if he expected it to do something unusual. It didn't cooperate.
"Right,"
said Lola.
"The other choice is to just go on with the plan, on the theory that nobody knows nothing about us, and everything's exactly what it looks like. I don't especially like that idea either, but at least it leaves us with something to play for."
"Yeah, I guess I can see that," said Ernie.
He thought a moment, then said,
"What if we're wrong about that?"
Lola shrugged.
"If we're wrong, we find out just how good fool security guards are, and just how serious they can get with somebody who tries to do what we're planning on doing. At least there's a chance they'll put us someplace Mr. V can't get to us very easily. Maybe he'll even accept it as an occupational hazard if we're locked up somewhere and not come down too heavy on us."
"Yeah, right," said Ernie gloomily. "So, Which way do you want to play it, then?
Dead straight, said Lola. Go on back to the casino, joke with Victor Fool about forgetting you'd won, and drop those chips right back in the slot.
Ernie was flabbergasted. Throw 4,000 pazootlers back down the hole? Do I look like a dimwit to you?
Yeah, said Lola. But for a moment there, I thought maybe you were getting the idea. I'll explain it again. You've got to look as if you don't care about a few lousy chips. Then Fool won't think you're just out to get his money. Then maybe he'll start telling you what's really going on with his son, who's the one we want to get anyway. Get it?
I got it, said Ernie sourly. It just seems like we could hold back one or two chips, in case of emergency.
Aw, come on, be a sport,
said Lola with a grin.
Besides, if you pull that lever just right, you might win. Then you'll thank me.
Sure, and maybe Victor Fool will disown Junior and put me in his will, said Ernie. What did you figure the odds against that jackpot were? 20 billion to 1?
Yeah, but somebody's got to win it,
said Lola brightly.
Why not you?
Better me than anybody else, that's for sure, said Ernie. Except I know better than to hold my breath.
Go play it anyway, said Lola. We don't have any other choices, so we might as well have fun with the one we do have.
All right, but don't blame me if I come back broke, said Ernie,
and he headed out the door and back to the casino.
Great Goomba! Who dealt this druts? Growled Houston Obetter, scanning his cards.
The game was Red Comet Stud, high-low, with a buy after the last down card.
Your good buddy over there, said Chocolate Harry, who was sitting behind an impressive pile of chips. You don't lack 'em, throw 'em in. Otherwise, there's a bet on the table you gotta call, or raise.
I ought to fold, said Obetter. But I guess I'll look at one more card.
He shoved a red chip into the center of the table. Chocolate Harry shrugged.
Ain't no law I ever heard of says you gotta play if you're afraid of losing, and that's the only gambling tip you're gonna get from me. He shoved in a blue chip. Raise your 5. Call, said Sushi, whose own pile of chips was slightly smaller than Chocolate Harry's, but still a good bit larger than what he'd brought into the game.
L.P. Osho, in the dealer seat, looked at his cards.
What the hell? It's only money, he said. You're 10.
He slid a blue chip into the pot.
And mine.
He added a second blue, grinning.
That's what I like to see, said Harry, beaming. Man knows how to play the game. You still in street?
Not with these cards I ain't,
said the Legionnaire, turning his cards face down.
Can't get high or low, either one. Why don't somebody invent a game where middle hand wins?
You can call it when it's your deal, said Harry. Meanwhile, we got cards and money on the table and time's a-wasting. You in, Mr. Tation?
Austin Tation took a sip of his drink, bourbon and cactus juice, and contemplated first his own cards, then those visible in the other hands.
I like what I see, he said. Call. You can't like it that much or you'd raise, said Harry. Your turn, Obetter. 15 bucks to play. Jet out for free. What do you say?
I said I'd see another card, said Obetter,
putting in 2 chips. He looked like a man whose word of honor has just been impugned. Which, of course, was exactly what Chocolate Harry was banking on.
Here's the raise, he said, and the last raise for another blue one.
Plink went his chips into the pot. Sushi rolled his eyes and folded, but the 3 hunters all called, with varying degrees of enthusiasm. The game had been going like this all night long.
More cards, Mr. Dealer, called out Harry. Make 'em good. I don't want to hear no complaints about how folks came to Chocolate Harry's to play poker and couldn't get a hand to play.
Yeah, yeah,
said Osho, turning over another card for each of the players.
Read 'em and weep.
That's what the farmer said, said Tation. Or was it, weed 'em and reap, ha ha.
He shoved a red chip into the pot. 5. Houston Obetter snorted.
I don't know what's worse, your jokes or my cards, and that's a mighty sad comment on this hand.
He tossed his hand in and pushed back his chair.
Gotta get me another brew.
Help yourself, we got plenty of it,
said Chocolate Harry, gesturing toward the cooler in the back of the supply shed. He turned back to his cards and shoved 2 chips into the pot.
Your nickel and my dime.
Saw just nickel-diming us to death,
said Street, looking enviously at the growing pot. Chocolate Harry snorted.
A man wants to take the boodle home, he gotta feed the pot, he said. You don't have to play the game if it's too rich for your blood. We got a lot of folks on base would like to take some of this money if you ain't up to it. Hey, Sush, you think Duob's up for a game?
Before Sushi could answer, Street said,
I didn't say I was giving up my seat.
Just kibitzing is all.
Whatever you say, said Harry. Didn't want to see a man jump in over his head.
Sure you did, said Sushi, leaning back in his chair to study the visible cards. You run a poker game every few days, and I never yet saw you tell somebody he couldn't play because he wasn't good enough, or rich enough for that matter. You might be the most democratic sergeant in the Space Legion, when it comes to taking other people's money.
Well, I'll take that as a compliment, said Chocolate Harry, even though I have to say you're wrong. You give me my choice. I'd much sooner take a rich man's money than a poor man's, and the reason why is easy. Because there's more of it to take, said Sushi and Street in union.
Chocolate Harry frowned.
What's wrong with you boys, stepping on all a man's best lines?
Just trying to save you the effort, said Street, grinning broadly. You working so hard as it is.
Hellfire, there's a game going on, said Ostentation. You boys playing or not? It's your bet, ain't it, LP?
I'm calling, said the dealer.
You in or out, buddy? If you ain't holding anything better than you're showing, you best get out while you still got some skin left.
There's one more card before the buy, said Tation, unfluttered. Plenty of time to get better. Call. The call went around the table, and Osho dealt the remaining players one card each, face down.
All right, pay dirt, said Tation, peeking at the card he'd gotten. You might have the dirt, but I'm the one who's taken home to pay, said Chocolate Harry with a broad grin. He was showing three queens in his face-up cards.
We'll just have to wait and see on that there question, said Osho. You can brag all you want about your popgun, and don't expect it to carry no weight with somebody that's got a cannon.
That's the truth, said Ostentation. There's gas, and there's neutronium, and a man that don't know which one's which better keep tight hold of his wallet. I bet 25.
Chocolate Harry looked at Tation's cards.
Must be going low. Bump it 25.
And another 25,
said Osho, shoving three blue chips into the pot and grinning broadly. Tation raised another 25.
Looks like we got you whipsawed, Sarge, he said.
Chocolate Harry chuckled deep in his throat.
Huh, you talk bad, but it's the cards that get the last word.
Sushi had been kibitzing the game, waiting for the next deal. Perhaps that was why he noticed that Obetter, after folding his hand, was taking a long time to fetch himself a beer. He looked around the shed and spotted the absent player standing by a rack of weapons. He had a beer can in his hand all right, but his attention was raptly focused on the military hardware. Casually, Sushi made his own way back to the cooler, got himself a cold one, and sauntered over to stand next to Obetter.
You look like a man who knows his way around a gun, said Sushi.
Huh?
Said the hunter, startled.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Gotta have some serious weapons if you're gonna hunt big game. I surely do admire some of the stuff you Legion boys have got, though.
Yeah, I guess it's pretty exotic to civilians, said Sushi. We use it all the time, so it's nothing special to us. Then again, we have specialized requirements. Most of this stuff would be of no use for you. You don't get much of a trophy if you blow the whole animal to constituent quarks, do you?
No, I reckon not, said Obetter with a guffaw. But there's trophies and there's trophies, you know. And with some of the critters I hear tell this planet's got, maybe just stunning the critter so's you could cut off the head would be fine.
He waved his hand in the direction of a Zenobian stun ray, a weapon that, as far as Sushi knew, was still available only to the Omega Company, thanks to the captain's father's munitions plant.
Stunners? Yeah, that'd be triff, if there was some weapon that would do it, said Sushi, watching Obetter's reaction carefully.
But before the Tejon could say anything, a voice came from the card table.
Hey, Houston, you playing? We're dealing chainsaw.
Obetter gulped and said,
Excuse me.
He headed back to the card table, obvious relief on his face, but Sushi couldn't help but note that both Tation and Osho were staring daggers at their fellow hunter. Ernie sauntered into the Fat Chance Casino as if he owned the joint. Well, why not? Looking and acting confident, putting up a good front, was one of the main weapons in a con man's arsenal. If nobody thought to question him, he was home free, and, after all, right there in his pocket were chips worth $4,000 that he was planning to play with. That gave him just as much right to be there as anybody else, more than most of the other customers, if the amount of money he had meant anything. His first stop was at the cashier's window to change one of the $1,000 chips into 50s. The smaller denominations would allow him to gamble with the money over a longer stretch of time, although he'd still be betting amounts significant enough to distinguish him as a big-time player. An elephant, in the casino worker's slang.
he would reserve the remaining big chips to play Victor Fool's $1,000 slots, allowing him, or so he hoped, to strike up a further conversation with the weapons magnate. Ernie was looking forward to renewing that acquaintanceship. He still had hopes of finding out exactly what Fool's real plans were. They couldn't possibly be as stupid as trying to win a jackpot big enough to break the bank, as Fool had insisted he was doing. And just maybe, he could find out where Willard Fool was, so he and Lola could decide whether or not to change their original plan of kidnapping the young Space Legion captain, who was majority stockholder in the casino. Whether they could convince the people who'd hired them to go along with a change in plans was another problem. Ernie preferred not to think about that one just now. He sat down at a blackjack table and played a few hands. The cards weren't running his way, and he ended up dropping $300 in 15 minutes. It was hard to keep his hands from shaking. Here he was, frittering away more than his entire daily budget before Victor Fool had tossed him a chip and told him to play the slots. A person with any brains at all would probably pocket the money and get the hell off Lorelei. But, of course, Ernie wasn't going to do that. Lola was the brains, and she told him to come back here and play with it. She didn't have to tell him twice. He stood up and wandered over to a roulette table. He'd get worse odds, but the game was more in line with the high roller image he was trying to project. A perky redhead with a really spectacular figure was watching the action, waiting for two or three blacks in a row, then sliding a large bet onto the red, figuring it was more likely to come up now. Ernie had heard somewhere that it didn't make any difference how many times one color came up. The odds were still the same old 50-50 on the next turn of the wheel. That didn't make sense to Ernie. If you couldn't trust the law of averages, there wasn't any point to gambling at all. Ernie bellied up to the table alongside the redhead. He slipped a 50 Patuzzi chip out of his pocket and placed it on the red, right next to hers. Startled, she looked up at him. He grinned at her, not worrying for the moment about what Lola would have to say if she found out about it.
"Hey, I gotta play the role," he told himself.
The croupier announced the end of the betting with the traditional incomprehensible phrase in some forgotten old earth language. Impulsively, Ernie pulled a second 50-buck chip out of his pocket and put it atop the first, just as the wheel began to spin. The redhead's eyes widened, and she turned a very curious sidelong stare at him before returning her gaze to the wheel. Ernie caught himself involuntarily holding his breath as the wheel spun. He made himself relax. If he was supposed to be a big spender, $100 shouldn't be a big deal to him. Hell, $1,000 shouldn't be that big a deal. In a little while, he was going to go throw that much into a slot machine in a couple of pulls, and unless he got really lucky, he wasn't ever going to see it again. The wheel slowed, and the redhead leaned forward, showing off a nice stretch of décolletage. Ernie wondered if it was for his benefit, and decided it probably was. He chuckled and managed to keep from turning right around to stare at her. As interesting as she might be, he had to remember his real purpose here. More importantly, he had to remember what was likely to happen to him if Lola found out he'd been fooling around with some bimbo in the casino. Yes, those were the words she'd use. Then, she'd use considerably harsher words directed at him, and unless he got very lucky, the harsh words might be followed by a stream of very hard objects flung in his direction. It probably wasn't worth it, Ernie thought, even as the roulette wheel came to a stop and showed the ball resting in a red slot. He and the redhead had won. She let out a whoop and gave a little jump, brushing up against him, on purpose, he was sure. He was going to have to be very disciplined. He was going to hate it, but that was the price a fella had to pay. Even so, he managed to smile as the redhead brushed up against him again and turned her big eyes his way as he scooped up his winnings.
Chapter 12 Journal Number 714 The most common question asked of a legionnaire, at least by civilians, is, "Why did you join the Legion?" The most common answer, in my experience, is, "To get a fresh start." While that answer might not be strictly true in every case, it does possess a great deal of psychological validity. A genuine fresh start in life is a rare thing indeed. Even the illusion of a fresh start can lead to a significant alteration in a person's outlook, and, in fact, more than almost any other institution in society, the Legion does offer a fresh start to those who come to it in search of one. The fact that so few of its members take any significant advantage of the opportunity is hardly to be held against the Legion. Thumper bounded out of bed. It took him only a moment to reach the jangled wake-up alarm and turn the buzzer off. That was all it took to remind him that he was in a new place. It also reminded him, inevitably, of everything that had happened the night before. He shook his head. There was no changing what was past. He quickly washed up,
threw on his Black Legion jumpsuit, and went out to find some breakfast. Then he would report to Sergeant Brandy's training squad, as she had instructed him the previous afternoon. It was good being allowed to eat before having to stand in formation. Thumper decided that this was another one of the ways Omega Company was a significant improvement over Legion Basic Camp. He loaded up his tray and turned to look for a seat at one of the tables. To his surprise, there were a couple of Legionnaires beckoning to him from the nearest table.
"Hey, new guy, come sit with us," said one of them, a small human with a hairless head and a wide smile.
Encouraged, Thumper took one of the empty seats at the long table.
"Thanks for the invitation," he said. "My Legion name's Thumper. What about you guys?"
"I am Mahatma," said the one who'd invited him. "And until you came, I was one of the new guys in Omega Company. So you have caused me and my friends to become veterans, for which we owe you many thanks."
The others introduced themselves, a small human named Supernat, and her partner, a Voltron named Tuscanini, two Gambolts named Dukes and Rube, and two other humans named Roadkill and Street. As it turned out, several of them, including Mahatma, were also members of Sergeant Brandy's training squad, to which Thumper had been ordered to report after breakfast.
"Is this going to be anything like Legion Basic?" Thumper asked.
Mahatma smiled.
"I went through basic training with Brandy, so I have nothing else to compare it to," he said. "Sergeant Brandy can sometimes be obstinate, but she is usually capable of adapting to circumstances."
Tuscanini snorted and said,
"Mahatma has not seen many other sergeants. I have. All of them were tough, and Brandy is tough, too. Better than most sergeants, she understands that not all Sofans are just humans with funny faces. That is a good thing to know for a sergeant."
"But she will make you work hard," said Rube. "I hear you are a fast runner and a good jumper."
"Well, I guess so," said Thumper. "They told me I set a camp record for the obstacle course in basic."
"Ah, yes, the obstacle course," said Dukes, brushing crumbs out of his whiskers with one paw. "Captain Jester has us run the obstacle course, too. I believe that we do it differently from other Legion companies. It'll be interesting to hear what you say after you run it with us."
"Uh-huh,"
said Thumper, suddenly cautious.
"I guess we'll see what it's like when it comes up."
He sensed some deeper meaning behind the Gambolt's comment, some unspoken subject he'd best not commit himself on until he saw its complexities firsthand. He took a forkful of salad to chew on, hoping that someone else would pick up the thread of the conversation. But the only one who spoke was Mahatma, who simply smiled and said,
"Oh, yes, we will certainly see."
And with that, Thumper had to remain contented until one of the squad looked up at the wall clock and said,
"Uh-oh, time to get moving. Don't want to make the new guy late on his first day here."
"Oh, why not?" said Roadkill, grinning. "Make the rest of us look bad if he being always on time. Ought to start out on the wrong foot like the rest of us."
"Not correct," said Tuscanini, shaking his huge head. "If new guy starts out on wrong foot, he doing it on his own. That what Omega Mob be all about. From each according to his ability, to each according to his misdeeds."
Supernat looked up at her partner in awe.
"Tusk, I don't know what you've been reading, but I somehow don't think it's a manual of military procedure. You're right about one thing, though. The new guy's got to make his own mistakes. Go ahead, Thumper. The others can be as late or early as they want, but you need to be on time today. And good luck."
The others at the table laughed, but they all stood up along with Thumper.
"Okay, new guy. Follow us," said Street. "Brandy be waiting."
And together, they filed out of the mess hall toward the parade ground for Thumper's first full day with Omega Mob. The observer in the Fat Chance Casino's control center turned away from the monitor screen and called out to her superior.
"Looks like Tony's got a live one," she said.
"Let's see,"
said the manager. She stepped up behind the observer's chair and leaned forward, looking at the monitor.
"That guy again," she said.
"Yeah, we've been watching this bozo for a good while now. Has all the marks of a grifter, but nobody's seen him doing anything we can nail him for, yet."
The observer leaned back.
"Maybe he's running some kind of game outside the casino, then coming in to gamble with a take. I can't believe he came by that kind of money, honestly, to throw $100 on the table like it didn't matter. As if."
The manager, who was a stickler for grammar, corrected her.
"Well, we don't know where his original stake came from, but we can blame the old man for giving him enough to play at the big tables."
"The old man?"
The observer looked up in surprise.
"What do you mean?"
The manager grunted, then said,
"This guy walked up to Victor Fool when he was pumping chips into the $1,000 slots. For whatever reason, Fool seems to have taken a shine to him, so he tossed him a chip and asked him to play it for him. To change his luck, I guess. The guy wouldn't take it at first, but Fool told him they'd split anything he won. Damned if the guy doesn't score an 8-for-1 and comes out 4,000 ahead. This morning, he changed 1,000 into smaller chips. Those 1,000-buck chips are all marked, and that's what he's playing with now.
Uh-huh, said the observer.
Well, it looks as if he's winning a little bit of his own. Red just came up twice more, and he was down on it both times.
Shit, said the manager.
I hate it when these guys win. Let's just hope Tony can persuade him to let it ride a little longer. We don't want this guy getting too far ahead of the game. He's too slimy for my taste, and I'd just as soon not give him enough money to try something really big.
Like what?
Asked the observer.
I mean, he looks like a slime ball, but so far the worst I've seen him do is stare at Tony's boobs, which he's trying her best to get him to do anyhow.
Well, we've got a little bit of history on him, said the observer.
He and a woman were here a few months back, and we had a couple of flaky security incidents involving them. Nothing we could make any kind of case on, but suspicious. And they left the station very suddenly. Didn't check out or anything. Everything was paid up, so we didn't follow it up. But I'm wondering if we should have.
He won again, said the observer. That's 1,600 he's ahead now.
Let him just keep playing,
said the other woman, leaning forward to stare at the monitor.
Better yet, let him bump the bets even more. Come on, Tony, that's what you're here for. Get him to put his whole wad on the red.
She spoke as if the redhead woman, whose job description fell somewhere between shill and undercover security guard, could actually hear her. Maybe she can hear, thought the observer. It wasn't unknown for the floor agents to wear equipment both to send and to receive messages. Whether Tony had heard the supervisor or simply grasped what the situation demanded, the observer never found out. But she leaned over to the object of their scrutiny and said something in his ear. He grinned, stupidly. Whoever this guy was, suave wasn't in his repertory at all. Then he reached in his pocket and pulled out a handful of chips. He looked at them, shrugged, and put them all out on the red section of the betting layout. Even from the observation cameras lodged in the ceiling lighting fixtures, it was obvious that there were $3,000 chips in the stack.
Yes,
hissed the supervisor.
He's betting everything he has. Come on, Black.
Black, yeah, come on, Black,
echoed the observer. Rooting for or against one of the players wasn't really professional, but there were times even the most hardened casino hands got involved in the play, and nobody could really object if they were rooting for the better to lose. The wheel spun, and the spectators at the table leaned forward, holding their collective breath. So did the two unseen spectators high above the action. The wheel gradually slowed, and the ball's motion brought it down into the slotted section until it came to rest in one division.
All right, red again, shouted Ernie.
Suddenly, there was a stunned silence around the table as the other bettors realized what had happened. The croupier turned a sour look toward the wheel as he watched Ernie scoop in his winnings, now totaling over $10,000. But it wasn't the wheel's fault or the croupier's either. Ernie was on a hot streak. He knew the feeling, and it was hard to keep from grinning. It went against all his instincts to pick up his chips when his luck was running, but out of the corner of his eye he'd seen Victor Fool walk by, and that reminded him what he'd come here to do. As tempting as it was to take another shot at doubling his money, he had work to do, and messing up this job was likely to get him in the kind of trouble he couldn't sweet-talk his way out of. He'd almost be better off coming home with the redhead. Her name was Tony, who'd been egging him on to bet the house on the roulette table. At least if he did that, Lola would vaporize him on the spot, without stopping to ask questions. Tony looked up at him now, a rather attractive pout on her lips.
Hey, what are you, chicken? Come on, let it ride one more time. I've got a really strong feeling Red's coming up again.
She put her hand on his arm, tempting him to stay.
Sorry, babe. Gotta go, said Ernie, reluctantly shrugging off her hand. Important business.
Aw, I thought you were a real man,
said Tony, fixing him with her most seductive stare. Behind her, the croupier was getting ready to spin the wheel. Tony pointed to the betting layout.
Show me what you're made of, big boy.
Well.
Ernie was torn between putting his chips back on the table and following Victor Fool toward the bank of $1,000 slots where he'd won his bankroll to begin with. He glanced at the wheel. The croupier stood there with the ball in his hand, smirking at Ernie, just asking to be taught a lesson. Ernie's hand moved in the direction of his pocket, and he turned back toward the table almost involuntarily. But just as Ernie began to turn, a big man shoved his way into the space Ernie had vacated, plopping a small pile of $10 chips on the table. Ernie looked around and quickly spotted another clear space a few feet away. He stepped quickly forward, but just as he did, someone tapped him on the shoulder. He turned around to see a cocktail waitress with a full tray of glasses.
"Bring you something to drink, sir?"
she chirped.
"It's on the house."
"Sorry, honey, nothing now,"
said Ernie, forcing himself to smile. He quickly turned, only to find the space he'd seen before was now occupied. But there was Tony at the far end of the table, beckoning him. He started forward. Why were there so many people around the table all of a sudden? And reached the open space beside Tony just in time to hear the croupier call,
"Les jeux sont faits!"
Tony shot him a disgusted look, but the wheel was already spinning. Resignedly, Ernie turned to watch the wheel. If it came up red again... It spun, slowed, and after what seemed like hours came up on 32, black. Ernie had just missed losing all his winnings, and the rest of his bankroll as well. A cold sweat broke out on his forehead as he realized how close he'd come. After a moment of stunned silence, Ernie reached into his pocket and pulled out a chip. Without even looking at it, he handed it to the cocktail waitress who distracted him just at the crucial moment, then walked away in the direction Victor Fool had gone in. The waitress stood open-mouthed, staring at the $100 chip in her hand. Before she could tuck it in her tip pocket, a hand touched her elbow. She looked up to see Tony, who'd been trying so hard to get Ernie to let his bets ride on red.
"Don't spend it all in one place, sister,"
said the shill with a tight-lipped smile. Seeing the worry on the waitress's face, she added,
"No, don't worry. Nobody's going to take it away from you. But a word to the wise, you just got really lucky. Most of the time you'll make better tips if you don't stop the customers from playing. Now, you better get back to work. I know I have to."
Tony turned back to the roulette table, making it a point to squeeze up against the new big spender who'd taken Ernie's place. Maybe she'd have better luck getting this one to let his chips ride until the odds caught up with him. The Zenobian sun was just a hand's breadth above the horizon as Fool stepped out into the parade ground of the Legion base for his morning run. The early morning desert air was crisp and cool, belying the furnace-like temperatures Fool knew by now to expect by midday. The company's prefabricated base module was climate-controlled, of course, and it had a thoroughly modern gym and spa built into it. Fool would have accepted nothing less for his money, but he still felt a certain exhilaration when he did his running outside under the blue sky, the real planetary soil under his feet. If nothing else, it made him feel more in touch with the world he and Omega Company had come to help. As was his habit, Fool turned and scanned the horizon in every direction. As usual, there was little to see that differed from what he'd seen the day before or any of the other times he'd looked out on the landscape surrounding Zenobia Base. The small cluster of cirrus clouds to the west looked very much like the clouds that had been there yesterday morning, although he knew better than to believe they were actually the same. As much undue excitement as Fool had been through the last day or so, he was actually rather pleased to find at least one thing that was exactly as he expected. With Omega Company, that was the exception rather than the rule, especially after last night's debacle in the mess hall. Fool had just begun to stretch out his leg muscles when Lieutenant Armstrong emerged from the base module. He and Fool had been keeping each other company during the morning run for several months now. They were close enough in age and physical condition so that neither held the other back, and of course it was good policy to have a companion along in case the unexpected happened. A sprain or some more serious injury was always possible, even in the controlled environment of the gym. Outdoors, in a desert environment, it would be foolhardy to risk it without help close at hand.
"Good morning, Captain," said Armstrong, nodding.
Before Fool could reply, a series of loud sounds came from the desert east of the base.
Pop, 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 pop.
Armstrong turned his head that way and said,
"What the devil?"
"That's gunfire, Lieutenant," said Fool, suddenly alert. "And unless I'm completely turned around, it's coming from the direction of the hunting party. What do they think they're doing?"
"Well, sir, I suspect they think they're hunting," said Armstrong. "The sport does involve shooting guns, you know."
Fool peered at his lieutenant.
"You haven't been taking sarcasm lessons from Beaker, have you?"
he asked. Then he shook his head.
"No, that would require a sense of humor. The point is, as far as they're concerned, neither we nor the Zenobians have given them permission to fire any weapons yet. And I wasn't about to give them that permission until we got them someplace where our AEIOU friends can't hear them banging away. Come on, Lieutenant. Let's go read them the riot act. It's just far enough to make a good run."
"Yes, sir," said Armstrong, catching up with his captain, who had already taken off at a steady pace.
Shouldn't we have some backup, sir? I mean, those people are shooting."
"Yes, Armstrong, and we're going to tell them to stop," said Fool, looking back and grinning. "We're the Legion, remember? We can handle it,
In fact, it's our job to handle it. And if we get there quickly, there's still some chance that Inspector Sneef and her friends haven't noticed the noise.
Well, what if they have, sir? Armstrong still looked worried.
We'll just have to convince them that we were the ones doing the shooting, said Fool, skipping over a small dry stream bed in the way. That shouldn't be too hard. After all, we are a military unit. It's our business to fire our weapons every so often.
Sneef will start quoting some regulation we're breaking, said Armstrong, doing his best to stay abreast with Fool.
They were now out of the cleared area immediately around the base, and the ground had become rougher.
Sure, said Fool, dodging around a low, bush-like native plant. One thing you find out in the business world, Lieutenant, you can't do anything without breaking one regulation or another. That's how the game is played. What makes the difference between success and failure is figuring out how to get your job done with as little interference as possible from the people who want to enforce the regulations. And that's what we're going to do here.
Yes, sir, said Armstrong.
He jumped over a low rock and kept moving in pace with his captain. Up ahead, another loud report broke through the calm morning air. Fool gritted his teeth. Whoever was doing the shooting, he hoped they had enough sense to make sure what was in the line of sight before they pulled the trigger. He hoped he wasn't going to find out he was wrong the hard way. Hurrying a bit more than was comfortable, Ernie caught up with Victor Fool just at the entrance to the High Rollers Lounge where the $1,000 slots had been installed. He slowed down the last few steps to give himself a chance to appear unruffled and relaxed.
"Hey, how's it going, buddy?"
he said, as if greeting someone he'd known since childhood.
"Any luck today?"
Eddie Grossman took a quick step forward, glaring at Ernie through narrowed eyes, but Victor Fool raised his hand and said,
"Relax, Eddie. You don't need to worry about this fellow."
"Mr. Fool, you're paying me to worry about this fellow, and everybody like him," growled the bodyguard.
But when his boss shot him an exasperated look, Grossman shrugged and stood back. Still, he kept his eyes focused on Ernie, ready to move in case of trouble. Victor Fool had the right to give him orders, but he was prepared to ignore those orders if it looked as if he was about to lose his client, not to mention his job. Ernie, who had an excellent idea of what was likely to happen if he made the wrong move, grinned broadly. He intended to be very careful not to do anything that the bodyguard might decide to interpret as unfriendly.
"It looks like I'm on a hot streak today," he said. "Been cleaning up over at the roulette table all morning." "Good for you," said Victor Fool. "The owners don't know it, but they're giving money away hand over fist. My idiot son thinks the way to run a casino is to give the best odds on the station. I'm trying to show him the error of his ways. A few lucky customers taking home big jackpots ought to put the icing on the cake."
"Well, I'm all for that," said Ernie. "Can't let these young whippersnappers think they know everything," he said, as if he were somehow old enough to be entitled to the sentiment. "His biggest mistake was running off and joining the Legion instead of settling down to business," growled Fool, only half listening. "Now he thinks he can run a business from halfway across the galaxy. Well, I won't say it can't be done, but you need some real experience under your belt, real business experience. None of this rah-rah save the universe crap."
Ernie, whose business experience consisted almost entirely of scams and petty theft, nodded sagely.
"No substitute for knuckling down and getting your hands dirty," he said. "Not a job for weak sisters."
"Just so," said Victor Fool.
"Say, how'd you like to take another crack at the slots? If you're on a lucky streak, you're just the man I need. If you win a big jackpot, it'll show the boy the consequences of setting the odds too much in favor of the customers."
"Sure, why not?" said Ernie.
He was enough ahead of the game that he could afford to throw a few tokens into the slots and still have a little nest egg that he and Lola could afford another couple of weeks on Lorelei. By then, he hoped, they'd have made some kind of breakthrough. If not, well, as usual, he'd deal with the problem when his other choices ran out. He followed Fool into the Elephant's Lounge. As usual, nobody was playing the $1,000 slots. Even the most well-heeled bettors generally considered it foolish to drop that much on such a low-return bet. Other than Fool and Ernie, there hadn't been more than the occasional dabbler who typically put in one or two tokens, then went on to play something that delivered better odds, which was almost everything else in the Fat Chance Casino.
"All right," said Ernie,
fishing in his pocket for the $1,000 chips. He had 10 of them now. He picked a likely-looking machine, not that there was any noticeable difference among them, and put a chip into the slot. He grabbed the handle, then turned to Fool.
"Say, by the way, what's a partner share to casino stock actually worth?
Must be pretty valuable considering they're charging $1,000 for a chance to win it.
I guess it's valuable enough if you want that kind of property, said Victor Fool. Probably 50 or 60 million.